This piece of music comes from Fox's Peter Pan and the Pirates. Peter Pan and the Pirates was not a good game. From all the research I've done, I've concluded that it was indeed a bad game. I'm sharing this, frankly, mediocre piece of music because it was from THQ's first published game on the NES in 1991. THQ is gone. As you may or may not know, the company officially sold most of its assets to other game developers and publishers on January 22nd, 2013. This event was expected by all, but it still hurt the industry a little bit. You know, we all knew that this was coming. THQ has been in dire straits for years. Well, at least it feels like years. And they had to fall sometime. But there was still this belief, I think, if you looked at most gamers and most game journalists, that somehow THQ would prevail. They had to win this, because in the world of video games, the good guys always win. But it didn't happen. THQ was gone. First of all, I'd like to express my sympathy to anyone who lost their job. That's the worst part of all of this, and saying anything different would just be petulant and selfish. I will live on if I don't get another Darksiders from THQ, but see the loss of jobs, and that's what matters. But there's another thing, another element to this story that I felt I should talk about. THQ did something wonderful in their last few years. You don't have to spend much time on the internet or on Twitter or on the comments in an article on any large video game site to notice a common theme. Gamers are pessimists. And there's not really any reason why if you look at it objectively, or if you say you're looking at it objectively but you're really not, like I am. Video games are getting better than they ever have been. And there's games for everyone. There's well, you're just being stupid if you think they're getting worse. But THQ seemed to break all of those borders down and publish games that made everyone feel excited, that brought some life back into this pessimistic, drudgerous existence that video gamers have to live through. It's so hard, really. And for that, we should just all give them a round of applause. Thank you, THQ. You really missed. And if there's one more thing I can say, which there is because this is my podcast, so try to stop me. If there's one more thing I can say, it's this. THQ really went out in style. Darksiders? Awesome. Hey everyone, this is the Armchair Gamer Podcast, Season 3, Episode 1. It was recorded on February 7th, 2013. It'll probably be released on February 8th, 2013. I'm your host, Graydon Fox. This episode is about Teen Ico. I'm going to be joined later on by Cody Downman. Now, we recorded this conversation on Skype, so there are some sound problems, but it's pretty good, and I think the content speaks for itself. Also, if you like the show, share it with others. It's a family show, really. Thanks for listening, and enjoy the show. So, the topic of today's discussion on this episode of the podcast is Teen Ico. And I thought this would be a good topic because they haven't released a game in, like, a console generation, so it's probably pretty good to be talking about them right about now. But joining me on this episode is Cody Downman? Is that right? Yes.
That's how you pronounce it.
Your name is very sticky. It's tricky. Not
the
thing.
No, Bruce.
Could you change your name, maybe? Like, is that
I'll change it to Cody Steve. So
yeah.
That's really easy to do.
Cody Schneider, because he is the only person that I usually have on this podcast, and I've become good at pronouncing his name. So, could you, like, introduce yourself a little bit, because I don't feel like doing it?
Okay, no problem. Yeah, my name's Cody Bauman. I'm a junior in college right now, going for computer science. I write a little bit, do some blogs. I'm a member of the Overblood group, which is a fan group for Game Informers, Let's Plays, and I have been playing video games ever since I can remember. So I play anything from RPGs to FPSs to adventure games, and I just enjoy the video games as an art form and everything about it, to be honest.
Well, that sounds perfectly pretentious for this podcast. Because this podcast has become the hotbed for pretension and people who should not have podcasts, namely me. I'm not saying you shouldn't, but I haven't seen you much in the podcast realm. I don't know. Anyway, so this is our thing today. We're talking about, if you haven't played Shadow of the Colossus and Ico, you might not want to listen to this. Just, like, hop on Amazon, if you have PS3, go and get the HD collection. It's really good. It's probably the best way to play it. I read somewhere that Shadow of the Colossus on PS2 has some frame rate problems. And playing it on PS3, there's even some scenes with heavy underwater elements that definitely had some problems. So, I mean, it's really fluid most of the time. But just go and pick that up and then turn the show back on. So, what was your first exposure to Ico? When do you first remember playing it?
Oh, man. I first played it way back when. It makes me feel old. The first time I played it, it was one of those games that I just looked around and on X-Play back when that used to be on Tech TV. I remember they did a small review of it, and I was like, this game looks interesting, and then I did its research, and I saw it got a bunch of good reviews, and I was like,
hey, I'll try it.
Tried it out, and it was a different experience from what I've played, because I feel like it was one of those first games that really just showed what a game can be. It doesn't have to be just about going really aggressive, going really, being all about killing and straightforward. It was about these characters that, through minimal engagement, you learn to love and understand and care about. And that was a really cool experience to finally get that. And then it was just really neat.
That's interesting that you saw it on that venue. How did they, on Tech TV, how did they talk about this game? Was there any discussion of, like, its artistic merit? Or was it more of, like, I don't expect you to remember this, I don't know. Was it more of about the mechanical side?
From what I can remember, it was mostly, they just talked about the fact that, as a whole, the game just felt like it was right, like everything about it, the scenery, the characters, the writing, the story, the combat, it just all melded together to make this cohesive whole that was greater than the sum of its parts.
Okay, well, how old were you, like, at this time when you played this game?
Ah, jeez, let me think. I'm trying to think of how long ago Ico came out. It came out, like, in, like, 2001?
I think that's around then. I think it was, like, near Final Fantasy X, maybe? Like, that seems like...
I think I was probably either 12 or something like that. Because I'm 21 now, so it was, like, 12 years ago, so I was probably like 10, 11 years old.
Well, I don't... The game is kind of is about a 10 or around that, yep, that age kind of character. Was that like something that you kind of drew you into it? Like it was something you could relate to?
Not so much. This could just be because I was always a little bit older for my age. Like ever since I was, like, 10, I always played Call of Duty. I always played, like, some of my favorite games were World War II first-person shooters back when I was a kid. I loved playing Battlefield. That wasn't so much of it. It was just, like, the overall theatrics of the game just, like, brought me in. It just sucked me in and kept me there.
Well, there was something when I was playing the game that I noticed, and it was how... If the game was not done right, which it was in most part, there were some flaws, but what they were basically selling you was a recipe for an extremely tedious game. Because the game revolves around doing something that gamers hate, which is basically escort mission. It's just one long escort mission. And I don't know if I just have the benefit of seeing what this game did for the industry and what Team Ico did in general, but sometimes I couldn't really get that same feeling because I felt like it was just kind of wasting my time. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I felt like this is bad. So...
No worries.
Team Ico, just in general, they look to kind of deconstruct the way that we play games and that games kind of play us in a way. Yeah. Because if you wanted to make a really good game that justified itself, you would give Jorda, I think the girl's name is, your companion girl, Jorda person,
yeah,
you would give her more ability than just opening doors. You would justify her existence in the world. But I don't think that they were that interested in justifying Yoda's existence. It was just kind of like, she is there and you two are stuck together, so either you'll form this kind of relationship that the game they expect you to, or you won't and you'll turn the game off.
Yeah, I think what they do that's really interesting is by taking away her abilities, and one of the big things is, like, even on the cover art, like, it shows you holding her hand. That's a very intimate connection with someone, to hold someone's hand, and that's a constant throughout the game. It makes you, it creates this closeness you have with this character, between the two characters, that it's with very few words they're able to show how connected these characters are without actually having them know each other for any really extended period of time. They're just both stuck in this predicament together, and they just are both trying to get out of it.
Okay, yeah, well, I think also, there's kind of a line between, like, the things you had to do to just finish the game versus the things you wanted to do, because you always have to protect her, and if you go too far away, these demon kind of smoke creatures will attack her, and their basic goal is to drag her into this portal hole thingy and take her back to her frankly abusive mother. And so you have to protect her, but after a certain amount of time you kind of want to. It just at first what seems like an awful thing you have to put up with becomes integral to your experience in the game, I guess.
Yeah.
And so moving on from that, it's kind of interesting. There's almost a, I don't know how to describe it, but the world that you inhabit, minus the demons coming from the ground, and it's almost kind of a place you'd want to be under different circumstances. It's, I mean, there's a bit of like kind of tropical sort of thing outside of the city, the stone areas, but also,
There's wonderment. There's fantastical elements to it.
yeah, and I think it's interesting that it's such a nice place that you'd want to be. Like, it's very atmospheric. Like, there's, I think the only real music in the game is at the save points, or which is also kind of interesting that you can't save unless you have her with you because you have to sit down on your couches. But it's just kind of like a real place. And I think that in games, when something feels like a real place, even if it's not a place you'd necessarily want to be, or in the structure of the story, it's somewhere you have to get out of, you kind of want to be there because it's different. It's not like artificial. And I
Oh
think,
no, when you have a world that really envelops you and pulls you in and keeps you there, that makes the game hit that much harder, especially a game like Ico, who where a lot of its big moments and big components are emotional driven. It's about you being connected to these characters and being connected to this world and wanting to be more of a part of it and fix it.
and also, I guess, I mean, that's the main things in this game I want to talk about, and I guess we can move on to the ending, which is, well, basically, you have this scene where you're almost out of the castle place. I guess it's a castle. It's courtyards and all that. You're out of the castle, and you're almost free, but then you're running across this bridge, and it kind of splits in half. And you basically fall down, like you fall into the river ocean thing. And so you're separated from the girl you've been dragging along for 7 hours. And that's like, that's bad enough. Because the obvious thing is like, you assume that she's dead, which is kind of true in a way. But also, I feel like it was just handled in like a really minimalist way. Like, I don't remember any, I don't even think there was any music when it happened. It was just sound effects. But I don't, it was kind of like, the whole game is just so large, and you're just such a small little, just a small kid running through it. And it kind of showed that, like, outside of your own mind, your own, like, experience, what was happening didn't really matter. Like, because whether you saved her or not, this island would still be here, and this castle would still be here. And it's, all that matters is what you think does, in a way. And I feel like that's different than most games, because most games come from this sort of, this power fantasy of wanting to be the most important person. And this kind of is the anti-power fantasy game. You know.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I lost Mike for like half a second.
Okay, sorry. But yeah, it's basically a not power fantasy. So, let's tap off this talk about Ido. I have 2-5 questions for you, and I'll give you my answers after you give yours, because I've been talking a lot. So, first of all, do you think Ido still matters for video games today? And the second question, if Ido came out today, up to our standards now, and all that stuff, do you think it would have as much impact on the way people think about games?
Okay, to your first question, I think that if it came out today, it would not have... It would still be regarded as a good game. Of course, the graphics would be a little bit better. It'd look a little bit nicer. The world would be able to... It would engage you the same way, but it wouldn't have that same impact, because I felt like Ico was one of the first games to really do that, and that's what made some of its gripes... like between like the combat feeling maybe a little bit sluggish, or like the fact that it was all a big escort quest, how that was overlooked because of the fact that this world was so beautiful and was so engaging. Now, do I believe that it coming out back in 2001 has an effect currently? Yes, I do. I believe that it has a huge effect on the type of games that we see now in the type of games that we play, because I felt like Ico, along with Braid, back when that came out, I believe, like, in 2006 or something like that, I want to say, 2008, those are two of the games I felt like really brought into the limelight some of the different things that a game can do, like the emotions that a game can pull at, the fact that you could be pulled into this world so hard that every single little thing that happens, whether Yoda gets kidnapped or Ico gets beat up or anything like that, it really just hits home, because the world just sucks you in. It's a believable world, and I think that it was one of the first games to really push that envelope and make that be its main focal point and focus on that.
Okay, so basically a short answer for me is, if it came out today, people would hate it. And I think people would hate it because the sensibilities have changed, and that game is kind of hard to play now, and you really have to want to understand it, which I did when I played it, so that's why I like it. And then secondly, I think that we wouldn't have Braid and that game company right now if it wasn't for Ico in the past, so... And it matters still because there isn't a game like it, and I think the way it approaches artistic whatever, which is a dumb way to put it anyway, but the way it approaches that is different than other games. So that's my answer, and that wraps up our Ico talk. Thank you. I'm gonna start the same way I started the last conversation, the same way I started last time. What was your first exposure to the Stand?
Okay.
Shadow of the Colossus.
The first time I played Shadow of the Colossus, it was, again, right when it came out. I was watching X-Play and I saw it, and I was like, this game looks beautiful, and it looks epic. So I immediately went down to my local Blockbuster, back when those used to exist, and I picked up the game. I played it and loved it so much that me and my brother just kept on playing it for the whole week that we had it on rental, and we immediately went back and rented it again as soon as the week was up so that we could make sure we beat it before we brought it back.
Well, completely unrelated, but was X-Play, right?
Yes.
Was that on G4 at that time?
I think it was still Tech TV.
Oh.
X-Play was still funny.
Oh.
It still had a sense of humor, and Adam Sessler and Morgan Webb and all their quote-unquote interns who were actually their writers were all still there.
Alright, so, I guess, well, did you know it was the same people who made Ico? Was that, like, on your radar at all?
It was there. It wasn't as... I back when I was younger, I wasn't really big, like, oh, X developer made this.
Oh.
I should get this because X developer made it. I'd be like, this looked really cool. As I got older, like, once I got into my later teens, I'm like... Oh, I really like games made by Atlus. I really like games made by Square.
I really like games made by companies in South Korea who put their games on Facebook, and I can tell all my friends about it all the time. Those are
my
favorite
games. Oh
my
god, those games are the bomb diggity.
Yeah.
I love those games.
Yeah, so I played these two games at not the best time to play them. 2013, not a very large television, not very good sound. And it took a little more immersion than some other people might have for me to really get into it. But at the time, Shadow of the Colossus, I don't imagine it was like anything you'd ever seen before.
Oh no, it was really an astounding game. Just the first time you see that Colossus and you're just like, do I seriously have to fight this? Like, are you gonna do this to me? Are you gonna make me deal with this? It's just like, I don't wanna go here. I'm just gonna get on my horse and leave. But then, like, when you get up there and you realize that you have to defeat this Colossus, and you're like, man, let's do this, let's go. And you just start climbing up it, and you just, the way that, one of the best things I felt like with it was the camera, just making you feel like you were high up, making you feel like you were experiencing vertigo this whole time, standing on top of this monumentous Colossus. You're just like, what?
The first Colossus you kill, you kind of realize that maybe the means don't justify the end.
I wouldn't say the first one. The first couple I was pretty fine with, and then like around the like, once you start changing color, once your skin color starts going, you're like,
So it was the racial element. You were like, I am fine murdering these giant, wonderful animals, but if I have to turn into one of those Negroes, I'm getting off this dust right now.
Not that so much, but more along the lines of, it was just really interesting to, like, in games, you do a lot of bad things in video games.
Yeah, and
you do a lot of things that you as Mario, you go across this kingdom stomping on these Goombas and Turtles the whole entire time. You never question it. You never like, do these people matter? Do these things matter? No, you just do it. So that's another really neat thing about Shadow Colossus, was it turns that whole thing on its head, and it makes you think, crap, what have I been doing this whole time?
And the whole point of that game is you have this woman, which I think she has a name, but I don't think
she does not. You never get explained who she is.
Well, she's just some person. You don't know like what your relation to her actually is. You can infer things and you can assume things, but it could just be the funniest thing I thought of. It could just be some girl who thought you were like a creepy stalker, and then died, and you're going on this mission to save her. Like, you don't know. It could be that. Or it could be this love story happening with that. But there's no reason to assume that, just based on what you know. So, the whole game is just murdering, like, this species that's far from, like, so much gone. They're so far gone. They're so much, they're like killer whales divided by 100.
They're so old that they've reached a point, like, when one of the colossus is actually, like, comes out of the wall, like, when they come out of the surrounding landscape, that hits home the fact that these colossi are so old, you can pretty much consider them part of this world. You are literally destroying a piece of the world when you destroy a colossus.
Yeah, and I think there's one specific colossus, it's in the middle of them, like 10 or somewhere around there, where it's just flying around. Like, it doesn't,
yeah,
it never actively engages with you. The worst thing it could do to you is take a little health when it dives into the sand. Like, that's the worst that it could possibly do to you. But you're just murdering it for some girl who might not have even thought you were, like, who might have hated you when she was alive.
You know absolutely nothing about this girl that you're trying to save. All you know is that your character that you're playing wants to save her. That's all you know. You don't know why. You don't know who she is. She could be your mother. She could be your sister. She could be your lover. She could be some random girl that you saw. You could have been the one that killed her. It's a lot of... that's something that's also neat, is you get to create some of that story, depending on who you are as a person, the way that you think about this, the way that you think about the character, it changes the way you view the game.
Definitely. And I think that it's, well, when we talk about the two games in relation, I'll go into it more, but I think it's kind of interesting in Shadow of the Colossus how, I don't know how to express it, but just how hard you have to try to murder these things. Like, they're thrashing you around.
It is no easy feat. You are not like, I got this. It's like it's a game of boss battles, which if you gave me that idea on paper back in 2004, I'd look at you and tell you were effing nuts.
Or you are trying to make Mega Man.
Yeah. But even Mega Man, they have mini-bosses. I mean, they have mini-bosses. They have little NPCs to fight. Literally, the only thing you have in between fighting these bosses is shooting lizards to get more grip.
Yeah. Which I did not even know I could do until, like, the end. I never followed it, but it's this place where, once again, I don't want to go into this right now, because I think the most interesting part of this discussion would be comparing the two, but just, it's a place that, in any other circumstance, you want to be, but you don't belong there. Like, what you're doing is so opposed to everything that lives there. There's no indication that anyone sides this god that you're trying to sacrifice enough of them for to restore this woman. There's no evidence that they're doing any harm, and they look like they're just part of that world, like they belong there, as you already said. So
Yeah, you are intruding upon them. They have done nothing to you. These beasts have done absolutely nothing to gain your ire. It's literally just you going. It's like if you kicked open their door of their house and just stabbed them in the face. There's no reason for it. There's no like sense of this has a purpose. It's just you are going in and murdering these beings in their homes.
And in that way, kind of deconstructs like fantasy violence in games. Like, it kind of shows you that if someone actually cares about the world they're creating, how crazy it is to let someone else destroy it. And it's really disturbing in a way, because I think the only way to really beat that game would be to put down the controller and never play it again. Because if you finish it like most people who played it did, you're basically saying, I don't care about these things.
Go ahead. Sorry, I'm sorry.
So it's kind of like the opposite of video games in general, where it's always like, you have to keep going. It's almost like, well, I guess if you're that sadistic and awful, you can keep playing. It'll give you some more.
That's something I actually love about this game. It actively makes you want to stop playing it.
It's like The Walking Dead.
You actively are just like, I don't feel right about what I'm doing. I don't feel like I'm that, like, especially towards the middle when, like, the first time those black things went to you, you're like, oh, okay, that's really weird, but I play video games. This is something that happens all the time. Something weird stuff happens, and I'm probably getting more powerful or something. And then, as the game goes on, you start to notice that your character looks sick. He's acting weaker. He's not performing as well as he once did, and you're like, wait, what am I doing? And then you realize, like, and then as you said, the creatures, they don't attack you, they don't antagonize you. You are going into their homes and taking them out, and it's just like you sit that at one point. I believe wholeheartedly that everyone who has played that game at some point looks at it and just looks at it and sits there and goes, I don't know if what I'm doing is correct. Like, you sit there and you're like, I'm contemplating whether I'm the good character in this. Because, like, I think that's one of the first games where you can actually point to it and be like, you're playing a bad guy. Like, but it's not even that you're playing a bad guy. It's someone who has different intentions. He's still trying to do something that is noble, and he's willing to go through anything at all, any cost, to save this person, which is a noble feat in almost any other sense. But when you look at it as a whole, you're like, I don't know if it's worth it.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess, once again, I'll end this discussion, unless there's something else you'd want to bring up.
No, I'm good.
No, okay, so I guess I'll end this with the same questions of, if it came out now, would people still respond the same way? And what, in 2013, what does Shadow of the Colossus mean for video games and the way we think about them and talk about them?
I think that more than Ico, just because it was more of an engaging game, I feel like Shadow of the Colossus would have more of an impact as a whole on the industry, and I felt like back then, I feel like it has such a ridiculous impact artistically, because that's I still enjoy the games are our argument, just because too many people point to artsy games as art, where any game should be art, but that's another discussion. But that was the one game gamers were able to, almost all gamers uniformly were able to champion behind and be like, this is what our medium can accomplish when we go about it the right way.
Definitely. If this game came out today, for me, I think that people would... Well, I think it's interesting that it probably might not come out today, because it's an extensive game to make. Like, it's not a cheap thing that they did. And I don't know if the Sony... I don't know how comparable, like, Journey or something like that is to Shadow of the Colossus in terms of, like, financial input. But yeah. I think that Sony still is the only company that would probably make it happen, because it's a little too not... It's almost right for Nintendo, but there is a severe lack of Mountain Dew, so I don't think Microsoft would be very interested.
that's the one thing I don't care what anyone says that will always earn my respect from Sony will always earn my respect because of the way they treat new games and new IPs. They are hands down the best of the big three at financing and promoting new ideas and new IPs. And it's just a really, really beautiful thing the way they do all of it. It's just something that's really enjoyable.
Well, Ridge Racer.
Ridge Racer.
And I think it matters a lot today, because especially, and I don't want to get too deep into this because it's not a rabbit hole anyone is going to go down, but there is a lot of talk, and it's kind of misdirected, but we have to address it, of do video games make children want to kill people? Which is on its own not even relevant, because there's the whole, Slate versus...
I would even...
Yeah.
I like to not even justify it as a legitimate argument by not even talking about it, because it's just one of those things that... It's people afraid. They grip to things that they don't know, and it's nothing that deserves to be even talked about, because studies have proven that it doesn't have anything to do with it, and it's just one of those things that we as a society have to get over.
Well, I think that just the whole murder simulator kind of whatever, I think that if someone were to play Shadow of the Colossus that doesn't usually play games, and they think that they're all murder simulators. This is indeed a murder simulator, but it's also, I don't know, there's more to it than that.
It doesn't reward you for it. Like, yeah. it's not a game that you kill these colossi and you're like, yeah, you really killed them. Yeah, I did a great job. Like, you do feel powerful, but like, you don't feel right. You don't feel like you did something that was supposed to be done. You feel like you've wronged this universe that you're playing in somehow.
Absolutely. So that is part two, and in part three we're going to discuss how Ico and Shadow of the Colossus intersect, because that sounds like a pretentious discussion to have. few like interviews with the creative, I think it's the creative director from Retro Relator, I think it is.
The creative?
I can't pronounce.
I'm trying to think. Who are you thinking of? The designer, like Fumito Ueda,
yeah,
Kenji Kato.
Yeah, I was watching an interview with him that was translated. Well, it wasn't translated. There was just subtitles, but
yeah.
I think there's 1UP that did it actually. Which come on, everyone, give 1UP some love. Like, check them out a few times. They've kind of gotten screwed up for years. No one really likes them anymore. But they're great. Do a lot of good stuff. Retronauts is gone. Anyway, there was an interview on 1UP, and it's funny because so often, well, I think that art, which is a nebulous term, but I'll use it because that's the word that we means what I'm talking about. Artists generally in some way reflect their art, and I think Fumito Ueda definitely does, because I don't know if you've seen the interviews with him, but he's really withheld. Like, he isn't overstated. He isn't a Cliffy B or someone like that. Ken Levine.
Kevin Levine's super reserved too. What are you talking about? He hates people.
No, well, I mean, when you actually listen to him, when you listen to, like, sorry to get off on this, and yes, this is a prediction. Every episode of the show, I will talk about this podcast, Irrational Games podcast. In that element, he does have a lot to say, but
yeah, he's a very passionate man about what he loves. But besides that, I love hearing things around about the industry about how reserved he is and how uncomfortable he is at, like, events. But that's a story for another day.
Yeah. The Ken Levine episode of the Unto Gamer podcast will have to wait until another day. Yeah, it will not feature him because, as I've already mentioned, no one listens. But, so, I think that he's very reserved, and I think that these two games are kind of an extension of him because they're both understated a lot. Because both games are Japanese in a very noticeable way. Well, they have a kind of obsession with coming of age and purity and all of that. Where the symbolism is kind of in your face in a way that you might not notice it in Ico, and also in Shadow of the Colossus. Because the whole premise of Ico is basically that this kid, this innocent Ico, is his name, he is sent to this island because he has horns on his head. And it's
puberty.
Yeah, puberty. And he's kind of realize it, which is also kind of strange because, I mean, wouldn't someone notice that he has horns coming out of his head before he was 10 years old? But that's I guess that's a discussion. Well, I mean, your body changes a lot then, I suppose. But, some people get hair in strange places, others have horns coming out of their heads. It's all, nothing you do in that game, from what you know, from what the game tells you, is morally wrong. Because I don't think there's any other impression you can have of Yorda's mother that wasn't, she's abusive and she wants to, she does not have her daughter's best interests in mind.
It's very straightforward about the way that it treats, it's very innocent, like the way that you're all the actions that you do, they're not like you're fighting humanoids, but you're never fighting actual like humans throughout most of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's like only one boss fight at the end.
Yeah,
and that's not even really a boss fight. It's really easy. But it's kind of the opposite with Shadow of the Colossus, where you would really have to be interpreting a lot and putting a lot into the game to say that the Wanderer is what he's doing is in some way morally upright. Or because
You can argue both. Like, it's one of those things where it's someone just taking taking a situation and being like, is this, like, to me, this is the greater of two evils. It's something that explores the moral gray area of it.
And I suppose at this time, it would probably be a good time to bring up the ending of Shadow of the Colossus, which kind of shows how pointless everything was, because even if you ascribe to the theory that they were lovers or husband and wife, she will never know what you did and why she is there, because you're a baby, and...
Yeah.
Which is... I don't even know how to explain that. Like, that ending, I don't understand it in a lot of ways, but...
It's just a lot about rebirth and redemption, I feel, at least.
Yeah, and also it's kind of... Again, it's just interesting in morality and in innocence, where this whole game, the imagery is rather obvious, you're slowly getting sick, and all these things that you're doing are slowly degrading you, and you have this chance to be reborn. The obvious question is, it's not really a chance, it's just, you just are. But, was that desirable? Like, if you had a choice, would you rather live as a basically committed a genocide, or take that chance to never know, but then also all you've done objectively is still there. It's even if you don't know you've done something wrong, the destruction is still there. And I mean, in that way, I guess they're kind of related, because Ico, the ending, the spoilers. Why even say that?
Spoiler alert!
Spoilers, that 12-year-old game, don't want to miss that. At the end, all you've done for Yoda this entire time, this whole, like, 7 hours or whatever, all this time, it's been pointless, ultimately, because in the end, she is trapped on the island, she has the same fate that she would have had anyway, and you basically failed.
But the thing is, what they do by having you be with Yoda is it makes it so that your goal was no longer to escape, but after meeting Yoda, you want to be with her.
And you aren't ever.
Yeah, you are at the end.
No.
Yeah, at the end, if you beat the game already, it shows him bringing a watermelon to Yoda. They meet up.
Oh, that's interesting, actually, that you bring this up. Because in the interview I saw, he basically said, that's a dream. Or that's something in his mind.
Oh.
It doesn't say that, but he's like, that's one way you could look at it. And that kind of pissed me off, because... Not that he said that, but it's in an interview in Japanese, and I can't put it in the podcast, because it's based on subtitles. But, I'll put a link to it. But basically, he kind of says that that's one way to look at it, but he doesn't say that until quite a while after he says that it was, like, a dream. And so it kind of leaves you thinking that's what he thinks about it. And I think that's kind of, like... I mean, they just... like, tragedies over there, it seems. Because it kind of shows almost selfishness in Shadow of the Colossus, where it's questionable how much of this is for this woman and how much is for you, but you're just projecting it onto someone else that it to say for someone else.
The more power you gain, the more it's like the more you just wonder if like he's in it for the power, if he's in it for saving someone. It's and that's a really interesting concept. That's one of the things I love about these games is that Team ICO games, there's a lot that allows you to think about. Like, there's a lot to think about in these games. It's not just something that is straightforward. Here's point X, here's what happens. Here's point Y, here's what happens. Here's point Z, here's what happens. It's here's point X. This could mean A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Here's point B, depending on how you think about point A. Point B can mean X, J, F, L, M, Z.
Yes, letters. That's right. So I think that my well, you can okay. So I'm gonna say what I think happened in the end of both of these games, and then you can say what you, do you think? Do you have a certain opinion on what you think happened or what it all kind of means? Because we can't probably not right, but I think it'd just be interesting. So, do you have an opinion?
No, it was just a lot of different stuff, and it was a journey. Like the in Shadow of the Colossus, it feels like you were just it's leads you to believe that you're turned into the child from Ico, and that you're playing the same character throughout both of those games, which is an interesting concept. And then in Ico, it leads you to believe that you afterwards you wash up on shore and you end up you're trapped, but you still live out your days with Yorda. And that's just well, it's an interesting it's interesting to view that interview, especially with you saying how it might be just if he's saying it might just be a dream that he's not actually with the Order, he just wishes he was, which makes that ending a lot more tragic and sad.
That's kind of almost like a Shakespearean, kind of, almost, except for the Shakespeare that they'll be dead, but if it was a little bit less drastic than him, maybe that's something that he might think of. Or the ending of Lost, where it was just Jesus all along.
Oh God, Lost. Don't bring that up.
Let's Lost Theory Podcast. Forget about Team Michael, it's Lost Ton. No. Oh man, those are good days when I could still watch that show. Anyway, so I think that basically, and it's just the sort of games you want to talk to other people about because in a vacuum, you don't necessarily see it the same way that you see it when you're talking to someone else and when you're discussing it. And in that way, I think it's also kind of this is the sort of game that makes it worth, well then, that makes it worth being on the internet, because most of the time it's not worth it, but there's a rare time where there's something like this that you just want to talk about. I guess this is what this podcast is for. I mean, is there anything else you want to talk about here?
No, we covered most, but we talked about how the games both suck you into the world and make you care about these characters. How both the games have
I just wanted to bring up also in that interview. Apparently, if you like replay Ico on the Japanese version, those indecipherable little characters turn into Japanese indecipherable characters. Well, not to Japanese people, but to me, which is I'm the main target, really. I don't.
Oh yeah, I remember that. And that happens in the American version too.
Oh, really? I.
Yes, if you play, I'm pretty sure if you replay through it, you can actually turn on a thing that has it so that you can understand everything they say.
And honestly, I almost don't want to do that because then it's sort of.
Yeah.
What?
I said, yeah, I agree.
It's almost like something that I guess if you. It's kind of like. Have you. I don't want to keep dragging this out, but have you played the Walking Dead game, Telltales?
I have not
Well,
gotten
basically,
that yet.
I've resolved to only play it once because everything that happened then is permanent for me. And it's kind of the same way where the way I follow that in is the way I'm going to keep thinking about it, because that's kind of how it happened for me. And I guess, yeah, so you were kind of listing all things that we talked about, and I interrupted you, but
yeah.
I think that we covered most of it, and don't worry, there will be plenty of music and stuff, which I will not pay for, because... And I will not license because...
fuck you guys. If you can't see me, but I'm flipping off.
Yeah. Not
virtual people.
And really, Sony, if you really want to cut out a deal to license your music on this hit program, I mean, it's all good. I'll re-edit everything. But I don't think that's your main priority. And if it is, hey, what about the last Guardian? Like, what's up with that, guys? When's that coming out?
Can we figure this out, please? I'd like to.
Can we suss it out? Let's just figure this out and figure out what's going on. Where is Ueda locked up and let him out? Because people want to play this game. And the more you hold on to it, the more people are going to be too excited and they're going to. That's more than you can deliver. And then we'll just hate you, Sony. It'll be awful. Also, put it on the PSP Go. Solve that. Bring that thing back. We gotta get to work. I guess to wrap this whole thing up, where can people find you on these wide open internets?
Well... First off, I have a Twitter, twitter.com/TheCodyBauman. And then I have, besides that, I've done a couple blogs. I've been writing more for my school newspaper. I have a blog on Game Informer. Oh, fuck you. Oh, bleep you, I'm sorry.
Yeah, this is a family show. I want people to go in front of the fire. I want this to be like a Christmas gift. Like, give it to your meemaw and your taffy.
Who doesn't tell their parents to go F themselves? Come on. Yeah. They know what the F word is. Like, I mean, I do all the time.
Well, I, before I was born, told them to F each other, which led to me being here, so...
Boo.
I don't know why I made that... I'm out. That joke, I went way too far to make it. It's like, under these conditions, no, this is fine.
I'm fine with that. You just had to think of your parents having sex. I didn't have to think of that. You did.
Well, but, I'll live on. I have to stop recording right now, or I got raging. Never mind.
And then besides Twitter and on Game Informer at, I think my name is Ryaken, RYAKEN24. I have like two blogs up there. I was meaning to do more. My computer broke down that semester, and I didn't have anything to do.
Both are blog herded and
yes,
10,000 views. Each.
Oh yeah, I wish. Actually, one of my interview with Brental Floss got blog herded, and I was really excited about that. And Tim Turry even retweeted it, which made me really happy.
Hey guys, check out Overcast Podcast. New episodes every Wednesday.
And then besides that, I've been
GIOR. If you guys get on that Dave is still cranking out those jokes. All those goofs every Wednesday.
He hasn't been on that show in the longest time. What are you talking about?
He's every week just getting some alcohol.
I'm drinking right now. I'm drinking some Yinglings while I'm talking to you.
Well, that explains the sudden decline quality. So, you're on Twitter, you're on GameInformer.com, you're on RedTube, which I was surprised, but I'm impressed, not gonna lie. thank you.
No problem, I'm glad I could make it. It was a lot of fun, but
yeah, it was great. Fun for the whole family, really. Go check them out on RedTube, like, seriously.